1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, to the Cubs extend Javier Baez. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Dave Wills, the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. We talk with him about Rays baseball, his fandom for the White Sox, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no games with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at brianismyagent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com, and make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. How do we determine someone's worth? Common answer is the market, right? Let the market determine how they're paid, who they're employed by, and how many benefits come to them. It's a fair strategy, but sometimes it overpays. Sometimes it underpays. I like to evaluate people and their worth based on merit and merit alone. Do you have skills? Do you perform? You're a good worker? What do you do for your company? Merit. That determines how much money you should get paid. Not, well, this guy's making that. I'm not talented, but I'm going to ask for that anyways. That's how it works, and I get it. I don't like it, though, personally, especially in the context of sports. In case you didn't know, Javier Baez may want a contract extension. Now that itself is ridiculous. I wouldn't pay that guy a penny, but that's besides the point. Let's say he really cares about the Cubs, wants to stay for a while, be a franchise player, even though he isn't, but let's assume he is. A report came out by John Heyman claiming that Baez would be looking for $200 million. Quote, I've heard speculation that all free agent shortstops will get $200 million something. We'll see. Trevor Story and Corey Seager are shooting for $300 something, but I would think Baez would be $200 million plus. I don't think they're there yet, but if they get there, maybe they could have a deal soon. I think I speak for all Cubs fans when I say that's a ripoff. I've never seen more agreement about this, about anything Cubs related. That's a ripoff. It doesn't mean Javier Baez is a bad player. It doesn't mean that no one cares about him. It doesn't mean that the fan base has turned on him. It just means that at $200 million, Javier Baez is not worth it. The Cubs have a limited payroll, quote unquote. Why would you spend your money on him? Make the case based on merit. Pretty hard case to make. You know, Javier Baez's top similarity score on Baseball Reference is Jonathan Scope. Well, then ask yourself this. Would you pay Jonathan Scope $200 million? Half of you probably don't even know who Jonathan Scope is. He's second baseman with the Detroit Tigers. He used to be with the Orioles and the Brewers. Would you pay him $200 million? I don't think so. So would you pay Javier Baez $200 million? No. Maybe the numbers will tell me a different story. Maybe I'm wrong. Well, let's see. 890 career strikeouts against 142 walks. Averages 28 homers, 88 RBIs a year. That's great. 83 runs scored, 778 OPS. Would you pay somebody with a 778 OPS $200 million? A 103 OPS plus career. That's 3% above average. Would you pay him $200 million? You could say, well, Hobby had that near MVP year. Yeah, in 2018. What's he done since then? And here's the kicker. I remember when Baez debuted in 2014, hit .169. Cubs demoted him. Came back for a little bit in 2015, then really got his footing in 2016. They demoted him because they said at the time, too many strikeouts. 95 strikeouts in 52 games. And they said, this is unsustainable. Go back to AAA and work. Well, supposedly he worked, but yet I sit here today talking to you, and he has 121 strikeouts against 14 walks in 82 games. So what'd he work on? Oh, no, that's right, because now he's an established superstar. You can't send him down anymore. So what he worked on, what he got better at, really is just regression. Now, if you're talking 2018 and you said, pay him $200 million, unfortunately, the Cubs would probably do it. I'd even agree with it at the time. He was at his peak. But today, it's pretty apparent to me, it should be to you, that this guy is not worth $200 million. I'd say barely $100 million. He should make about $20 million a year. That's fair for a guy his caliber. Good defender, power hitter, strikes out a lot, can hit for average. I'd pay him $100 million. That's being fair. Nothing more. I'm telling you, never seen more agreement on this. I'm actually very surprised. All the Cubs super fans actually agreeing that Javier Baez isn't worth the money. I'm shocked. Thought he was Mr. Fan Favorite. Well, fan favorite and actually performing, two completely different things. And you know, I know a lot of Cubs fans who've actually been very aggravated by him. Extremely aggravated. Not because he's a bad guy, but because the problems are persistent. He was sent down for a reason. And yet here we stand today, and the problem is worse. Isn't better, it's worse. Even go back to 2014, at least that year, 52 games, 9 homers, 20 RBIs, 169, 95 strikeouts, 15 walks. This year, 82 games, 14 walks, and 121 strikeouts. He has less walks in 30 more games. I'm not saying walks are great. I'm not saying go up and look for a walk. But when you compare those two numbers, it's obvious that he's not a disciplined hitter. That's the problem. I don't care if you walk 4 times and strike out 5 times. That's great. All year. Great. But when you're striking out 120 times and you're walking 14 times, well, that's a bit of a problem. Now we have all this extension talk. Baez said, quote, if anything happens, I'm ready, we're here. I think it's time to focus, to get back into first place. Yeah, right. And get back on track to make the playoffs. I'm not really paying attention to that. Well, that's a nice answer. This team is not going to the playoffs, but that's besides the point. He has to say that. What I'm happy about is he didn't at least affirm it. Because if Baez came out and actually said, I deserve $200 million, that would not be good for him. Not just for me, I'm talking about from everybody. Because no one supports this idea. Cubs super fans don't support this idea. I'm unbiased, and I'm telling you, it doesn't work. It won't work. A $200 million player should make an impact. Well, what have the Cubs done this year? If Baez wants to be paid $200 million, what has he done to push the Cubs in the right direction? Nothing. Yes, he leads the team in WAR at 2.8, but the team is a game under 500. He's hitting 244. He has 121 strikeouts. Tell me how that's worth $200 million. The issue is that he may get it, not from the Cubs, but from somebody, because the market dictates what you're paying. Jason Hayward was paid $180-plus million to hit 209. Perspective. Why? At the time, he was the number one free agent outfielder, and the Cubs were suckers in paying him that much money. But they did. They needed somebody, and I guess they won a World Series because of his defense, but not his bat. His bat's never been there. So they're paying $180-plus million for defense. And they did get screwed with that contract, no question. But it happened. Market said he's the best guy out there, and the market paid him his fair share. Now, the good thing is, for next year, the shortstop class will be loaded. Story, Seager, Simeon, then Baez. Baez is worse, much worse, than those three. It's not even a comparison. Carlos Correa is going to be out there, too. I'd say Baez and Correa are about equal. So, I highly doubt he'll get the $200 million. If he did, I'd be shocked. And I'd really hope it's not from the Cubs. I'm warning everybody right now, bad idea. Bad idea to pay him $200 million. I'd say differently if 2018 happened in 2019, 2020, and this year, if Baez was putting up an 880 OPS every single season, I'd say do it. Great move. Bargain. But not for this. I'm not going to pay somebody who's hitting 244 with 121 strikeouts in 82 games $200 million. I don't care how good his defense is. The Cubs made the same mistake with Hayward. Great defense. He'll hit. No, he won't. And if Baez is on this trajectory now and he's 28 years old, he was already sent down to fix up these problems and they weren't fixed. And he's been in the league this long now. Do you really think they're ever going to be fixed? Especially if big money is involved. You know the answer to that, and I do too. Not saying he's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's bad for the team. Good team chemistry guy. But he doesn't put up numbers. It's a bottom line business. Do you help us win? On the field. Because if team morale really mattered, or if it mattered a lot, then the Cubs would pay somebody $30 million a year to take control of the dugout. They don't do that. No team does that. You could be a rah-rah, happy team guy, but if you don't put up any numbers or any sort of production, if you don't bring anything to the table, it's not going to work. At least in Hayward's case, he played good defense. I understood why he was given a World Series ring. Good defense, solid right field, good arm, made plays, great. Javier Baez this year has not done much. And remember, I talked about the market. There have been a number of players who've done what Javier Baez has done and have received no money. Jonathan Schoop is a great example. Jonathan Schoop is not a bad player. Better batting average. Similar power. Good defense. And the guy gets paid nothing. He's going on minor league contracts each and every year, but yet he's similar to Baez. A couple of years ago, anyone remember Chris Carter? Yeah, the same Chris Carter who led baseball in home runs with 41. The next year, wasn't even in Major League Baseball. Gone. Completely gone. No one wanted him. Because he struck out too much, didn't walk enough. The league leader in home runs could not find a contract for the next year. Think about that. So it's all dependent on the market. If it was truly dependent on numbers, Javier Baez would be in AAA right now. If some rookie came up with this slash line, With this many strikeouts and no walks, he would be demoted immediately. It wouldn't even get to this point. Now we're talking about $200 million? You're crazy. And I'm happy. For once, people are seeing it. I think now people are starting to realize, wow, this team really sucks. The delusion is starting to go away a bit. Keep thinking rationally. It's not feasible to pay Javier Baez $200 million to hit 20 to 30 home runs, strike out 200 times, and bat 240. It isn't. Not feasible. I'd rather go with an undrafted rookie. Some farmhand, at least. He has more potential. And settling for $200 million, paying all that money out to get subpar production. And tons of strikeouts, too. It's not worth it. It'd be way different if 2018 was repeated. If every year he's putting up 30 homers, 100 RBIs, hitting 290. Oh my goodness, I'd pay him in a second. And I would have been wrong. Because in 2018, if this talk came up, I would have said pay the guy whatever he wants. I would have had no problem with that. So we all would have had to eat our own words. If they paid him then he played like this. Now we've seen his progression. We've seen the best, but we've also seen the worst. So when you see the worst, and it's happening as we speak, would you pay him? Would you pay him any money? No. Let some other team overpay for Javier Baez. I wouldn't. Don't pay the guy a penny. Look, he won a World Series. Young kid, won a World Series, on a great team, cherished forever. He'll be cherished here no matter what. Let it be then. He's been given more than a lot of other players have been given. A lot of young guys. I mean, even think of Nico Hoerner. Hoerner didn't debut until really after the Cubs were great. Baez came up at just the right time and got to win a World Series. That's awesome. Hoerner didn't get that chance. Other players didn't get that chance. He did. So let it go. He won. Memories made. Runner-up to the MVP award. That's it. Time to move on. Unless there's a significant change, unless that number stays at 120 for strikeouts and he walks 40 or 50 times and batting average goes up to 280 and home runs go up to 30 or 40, but that's not going to happen. 2018 was his best year ever. If he could have replicated 2018 and 2019, 2020, 2021, I would have said, pay him whatever he wants. But that's just not the case. He's done nothing, especially this year, to impact games, to impact this team. If he did, they wouldn't be here. See, 2018, Chris Bryant was hurting. He stepped up. He impacted games, and the Cubs at least went somewhat far. At least they were considered contenders by that point because of Baez stepping up, runner-up to the MVP. This year, when they need him, when they have everybody healthy, Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, everybody's back, Contreras, what has he done? Nothing. That's the point. Logically, this makes no sense, and it's not even worth wasting your time thinking about it. He is not worth that money. And the Cubs have to make sure they stand firm when they're doing these negotiations. I'm all for keeping him around for a fair price. But if you overpay for him, it'll be Jason Hayward 2.0, but worse, because you developed him. You sent him down to AAA to work on stuff, and none of it's been worked on or corrected. Stand firm. Don't cave to emotions or feelings. Understand that you need to prepare for the future. And if Baez doesn't get better, not going to be a part of it. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Dave Wills comes up next, so stay tuned.
Hey,
Sports Talk Chicago. Everett John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Rays and a Chicagoland native. Please welcome Dave Wills to the program. Dave, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, John. Thanks for having me.
So, Dave, how's it feel to travel again?
It's definitely different. I think that question might be better served to ask my wife. I think she's happy to have me out of the house again, finally. You know, we were married we've been married for going on, I think now 28 years. And, you know, this was really kind of the first stretch where I was home all the time. And my dad told me before he passed away, God bless his soul, that when he retired from IBM, you know, we were married for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, but not for lunch every day. Well, it was lunch, breakfast, and dinner every day. And thankfully, we were able to hold it together. And it is good to be back. I mean, calling the games off monitors served its purpose while everybody was trying to deal with the pandemic, the COVID-19 virus. And I totally understand they want to keep the players as healthy as possible. I did not want to go into a bubble myself. So, calling the games off a monitor for 60 games plus a couple in the playoffs served its purpose. But at the time, the numbers were going down and people were getting vaccinated. Our team was at 85%. So they eased a lot of the COVID protocols for the Rays. It was time for us to get back on the road, and I'm thankful that our organization, our ownership, Stu Sternberg, our team presidents realized that for our fans who want to be able to see the game through our eyes, can't see the game if we can't see the game. So it's been nice to be back with the players, with the coaches and manager Kevin Cash on the road again.
Are you concerned about your fellow broadcasters, a lot of which who haven't gone back on the road? Is that a problem to you?
You know what? I mean, there is some concern because, I think what happens is a lot of these people that are making the decisions don't care about programming. They care about the bottom line. And they care whether or not their radio station, television station, their networks are making money. And I think they spent last year realizing that they saved a ton of money by not sending broadcasters on the road. And at the time, I totally understood it. But if you want to be in the big leagues, if you want to be a part of big league baseball or any big league sport, there's a cost that's associated with it. And I think there's two ways to do radio and TV broadcasts, the right way and the wrong way. And the right way is for those players or for those broadcasters to be on the road, to be able to see what they are talking about. And for them to not be able to travel, it's disheartening because I think what's going to happen is more and more teams are going to start figuring out, hey, you know what? We have saved a boatload of money. In their mind, as money people and not, people that worry about editorial or programming, they're thinking to themselves, you know what, it doesn't sound that different. And so what's the big deal? And it's disheartening. It's no doubt about it. And it's affected other teams even worse. I mean, take the Toronto Blue Jays, for example. They don't even do a radio broadcast. They're simulcasting their TV broadcast on the radio. And Dan Schulman is, when he does the games, he tries to provide a little bit of radio broadcast to his TV broadcast. But, when Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler do the games, and I love both of those guys, they're mainly doing just a TV broadcast. And I just couldn't imagine being a radio fan in Toronto right now, trying to follow what's going on in some of those games. So that's a little disheartening in itself as well.
What was your reaction when you first heard they'd do that?
I wasn't very happy about it. First of all, Ben Wagner is a really, really good guy that has been doing their radio for the last couple of years, and I felt bad for him right out of the gate. But again, it's two totally different mediums. It really is. I know that, I grew up in Chicago, as you mentioned, and I listened to Pat Foley do simulcasting and Blackhawk games for, decades, a couple of decades. And, there's a way that he was able to kind of intertwine it that it worked a little bit. But, it works for hockey because of the game's speed and the fact that Pat did not describe everything, even, on TV and radio, allowed you to kind of have more of an easy listen. Even when you're listening on radio, you still kind of knew what was going on. But baseball, there's so much dead time and there's so much other things you need to fill and to paint the picture of where the outfielders are. And especially in this day and age of shifts, to set up an infield where they're at, you don't do that on TV. And I don't blame them for not doing that on TV. And what you always worry about, John, is there's always kind of like one guy does something and then you say, you know what? All right. There wasn't that much of a difference and other guys do it. So, I'm sure there's some other teams right now thinking about simulcasting after what the Toronto Blue Jays did. And there's been some pushback and we'll see if the Blue Jays bring radio back next year or not.
What's the most challenging part of calling a game off a monitor?
Well, you're relying on a couple of guys hitting the switches in a truck, you know, and I think there's two major things that affected us while we were doing games. One, our local guys were always great in setting up what we call the all nine feed and you know, kind of the matrix that we had on our 60-inch TV that was in front of us in the booth, which had, you know, an all nine feed, had the bullpens, it had a close-up shot, and it had the scoreboard. So you were able to keep track of everything that was going on. You know, but if you were watching the actual play-by-play, when the ball left the bat, if you didn't have a real good guy working the switcher or whatever you want to call it, I'm not up to, you know, a lot of TV parlance, but if he was or she was a little late, you know, the ball would leave the bat, and now you got a second or two to kind of figure out, was it a ground ball? Was it a line drive? Was it a fly ball? Where's it going? Where's it heading? You have a little bit of an idea when the ball comes off the bat that it might be heading to the left side or the right side, but you can't tell if it took one hop or not. And so, you know, just tracking the baseball as far as being a radio broadcaster was very, very tough at times. And, you know, I know that last year when we called the final play on the monitors of the American League Division Series against the Yankees, Giovanni Urshela hit an absolute bullet to Joey Wendell at third base. And, you know, I thankfully I had a little lag in the play-by-play to determine that it was a line drive because he caught it right off the shoe tops. But, you know, here's a chance for you to advance to the American League Championship Series on the final play of the game, and you're not even 100% sure what just happened. And thankfully I got the call right, and thankfully our front office at that time said, you know what, let's get you guys back on the road. And then the other part is when the national TV guys take over, and it's a national TV broadcast, quite honestly, they don't care what Tampa Bay or Atlanta or, you know, Cincinnati or the Minnesota Twins radio guys need or want. They're worried about the national broadcast. And we've had some of those instances during the season as well. And today they're doing a YouTube TV broadcast of our game. And we've had a couple of instances of dealing with that. And they don't have all the cameras that we need to broadcast a game. So, you know, you got it on radio. We're supposed to be the eyes of the fans who are tuning in on radio. And if we can't see, they can't see.
The worst mistake you made doing a remote game was what?
You know, I'm not even sure I could say I had a real worst mistake. I mean, you know, Andy, unfortunately, there was one time where I was looking down at my computer and there was something that happened and there was a major rundown. And by the time it was over, Andy just said, you know what? I honestly, folks, I didn't see what happened. We got to wait for the replay. So, and at that particular time, I just jumped in and tried to describe what happened. But again, I was looking down at the monitor while he was doing the play-by-play. You know, I'm sure we got a name wrong here and there on some line drives or on, you know, again, defensive alignments. You know, you don't really see the move. Unfortunately, we did not have any of the Len Casper or John Sterling problems, what we call the replay, but can totally understand why that happens. But, you know, I used to tell our bosses that halfway through last year that we're making three or four mistakes on purpose so that they don't get too comfortable with us calling games off monitors.
Dave Wills here on Sports Talk Chicago. Dave, what's your take on the Rays season so far this year?
I think we're about where I thought, you know, where we're supposed to be. I think we've had, a couple of so-so months mixed in with a tremendous month of May that, you know, the team all was hitting on all cylinders, offensively, defensively, and pitching. And, you know, we're a team that depends on run prevention. And since Tyler Glasnow went down on June 15th, we're quite honestly having a little trouble with the run prevention part. You know, Tyler was a big part of the top of our rotation. He could kind of calm things down as most number one starters do after maybe a couple of rough starts here and there. And you know, our defense had been at a very, very high and elite level up until about that point as well. And we've had moments where it's come back, but for the most part, I think our defense has just been very good, not elite like we've seen in the past. And then our offense has been a little skitterish at times. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think we are probably right where we are, you know, supposed to be at 55-39. You know, like I've said to many people here over the last few weeks, I know people are talking about injuries up and down everybody's roster right now. And, you know, I know that in Chicago, everybody's bemoaning the fact that the White Sox have been besieged by injuries. But, you know, it's a lot easier, I think, to cover everyday player injuries because it's the next man up mentality. And if, you know, you're never going to have all nine guys hot at the same time. So if you can keep two or three guys hot, you're still going to be able to score some runs. It's much tougher to kind of cover when pitchers go down. And I really wonder how many teams can afford to lose their number one starter and their highest leverage reliever, whether you want to call them a closer or whatever, like we have. We've lost Tyler Glass now for well over a month, and we haven't even had Nick Anderson yet pitch to a batter all season long, and yet this team is still 16 games over 500 and a game and a half back of the Boston Red Sox. So I think, again, Kevin Cash and his staff have done a wonderful job. I think our front office and bringing up some of the young blood have helped out. And then whatever you want to call it, our research and development guys have figured out a way to, you know, get Ryan Yarbrough to get guys out. Michael Wacha has been up and down, but he's been able to get some guys out. Rich Hill had a great month of May and has been a little wobbly in a couple starts since. And then our bullpen has been very, very good. And we made some adjustments on the fly there. So I still think there's room for improvement in our everyday players' numbers. I think about the only guy or guys that I could say right now probably hit to their level would be Joey Wendell, who's hitting in the upper 280s and doing what he's been doing all season long. And then Mike Zunino, who just left the game yesterday with a hip flexor problem. But he's at about 20 home runs, and he's provided the pop we've expected from behind the plate. But I think there's still several other guys who have a little room for improvement, including the young guys that we just called up.
Who else specifically are you thinking about could improve?
Well, obviously, Brandon Lau is a guy that I wasn't expecting to hit 300, but I was expecting him to hit a little better than 200. And I know he's hit over 20 home runs, but I still think that there's more to his game outside of just swing and miss or homer. Austin Meadows, I think, is a guy that can get better. Yandy Diaz, G-Man Choi. I mean, where should I stop? I know we put a lot of pressure on Wander Franco. When you're the number one prospect in baseball for the last couple of years, everybody expects that kid to come up and be a totally difference maker. And we've slotted him in either the number two or the number three spot in the lineup every day he's been up at the big league level. His right-handed swing looks really, really good. His left-handed swing looks a little more mechanical and still needs to get a couple of things kind of worked out. But, here's a guy, again, that I think is going to put together much, much better numbers than he's shown so far. I mean, Wander overall is hitting, in the low 200s. But I think here's a guy that, when it's all said and done, is probably going to get that number up in the 250s. And as he gets more comfortable hitting left-handed, he'll be fine. And then, we'll see. Austin Meadows, again, a 238 hitter. And then, I wasn't expecting him to do what he did in the postseason last year all season long. But I think we all were expecting Randy Arozarena to be a little more of an offensive threat than just a 248 hitter with 10 home runs so far this season. So, like I said, I think there's still room for improvement for a lot of guys on this team offensively. And if it comes to fruition, I think we're a playoff team right now. But I think if these guys do kick it into another gear, I think it'll make for a much easier ride to the postseason for this team as well.
Do you see any trades being made to boost things up?
We're actively searching. We're talking to all the players and teams that are offering their players. And I think that the big thing is for us right now, though, is, all right, we made it to the World Series last year. We've got a strong young core. Do we disrupt some of that young core to bring in a guy for a rental for a couple of months? And just how much of a difference will that person be, whether it's a pitcher or a position guy? I mean, 2 or 3, maybe 2 months ago, I would have been really, really looking for a power hitting right-handed guy. And if that one still comes, I think I'd be, happy to see him, because our numbers against lefties lately have not been very, very good. But I would right now probably be focusing on trying to find somebody at or near the top of a rotation and somebody at or near the back of a bullpen. We're kind of optimistic that both Tyler Glasnow and Nick Anderson will return sometime in the month of August, maybe September 1st. But you can't count on it. So I'd rather err on the side of caution and maybe go out and get somebody to bolster one of those areas, if not both, if you can, without, selling the farm. And then you go from there. But that's another question that you have to ask yourself, John. And we were talking about it last night during the broadcast. How much do you want to give up to get a guy like, say, a Max Scherzer or somebody else that's a top of the rotation type guy that's already well over 100 innings pitched that didn't even come close to that a year ago? And you're going to want him to pitch into and through October as well. And just how much is he going to have in the tank, and how much are you willing to give up for him? So, those are all questions that I'm sure Eric Neander, our general manager, and his staff are trying to answer right now. And, the other part is too, is, everybody's talking about whether Ray's window is only open for a significant amount or a short period of time. There are some people within our organization that don't even believe our window is open yet, that our future is still so bright that window might not open until next year or the year after that. So, how much do you mortgage the future to try to do something this year that who knows if it's even going to help you?
Could they beat the White Sox, Dave, if they get healthy or if they make a trade or right now?
I don't know if we could beat the White Sox right now because I don't think our pitching staff is as thick as it needs to be to beat them. I think the question for us is when we played them back in mid-June when Tyler Glasnow started that game, I think we showed that good pitching is going to stop that team. I mean, I think it's just the oldest adage in baseball that good pitching will stop good hitting, and Tyler showed that in his game back in mid-June. They also have shown, though, that when you throw mediocre pitching against the White Sox, that it's going to be, tough to stop them. And their starting staff has been very, very good all season long. But my concern for the White Sox right now would be, they have been very, very healthy in their starting rotation. Every one of those guys has made their starts for the most part. And, you know, I haven't seen anybody from the White Sox, like, looking to pull their foot off the pedal with those guys to make sure that they do have something left in, not only July, but August into September and then October. So if I was a White Sox fan right now, that would be my own concern, would be can these guys continue to do something that, you know, again, is going to be a huge increase of innings pitched from a year ago and how much is going to be left in their tank. Their bullpen, has been a little spotty getting the ball to Liam Hendricks at times. So, and their defense is still suspect most of the time. So they're a good team, but I think when we're healthy, if we get Glasnow back and we get maybe Chris Archer back and we get Nick Anderson back, I'll take our chances. We're the defending American League champs for a reason. We beat everybody in the American League to get to the World Series last year, and when we're healthy, I still don't know if there's a better team than us.
As a Sox fan, Dave, how impressed are you with their run right now?
You can't help but be impressed. I mean, at the same time, though, I think, from a guy watching it from afar, you can't help but think, all right, well, who exactly are they playing? I mean, when you look around and you look at both, the American League Central and even the National League Central, there's some pretty weak teams in both of those divisions. And not just one team, there's multiple teams. And, when you look at, like, the American League East, all right, well, the Orioles stink. They're not very, very good. But they still have an all-star in John Means and a pretty good pitcher every once in a while. And, they've got some guys in their everyday lineup. And then you look at the National League East, and is there really, really a team that stinks? I mean, Miami's in last, I think. But, on any given day when they had a couple of their pitchers healthy, the Marlins can go out and beat you too. And then the rest of the teams in both the East divisions are good to really good. So, I take a look for a grain of salt as to who the White Sox are playing. I've noticed that their record against the teams over 500 is well under 500. I know they just beat the Astros 2 out of 3, but they were a little banged up. But, you make no apologies. When you play the game, you win that game and you move on. And that's exactly what Tony La Russa and the White Sox are doing. And that's why they're walking around with, one of the best records in all of baseball. And I think the best record as we speak in the American League.
How'd you react if they won the World Series?
I'd be happy for them. I mean, probably not the same way I did in 05 because obviously in 05, I still had a lot of people that I was very, very close to as far as, people on the field, people in the front office, so on and so forth. I'm now 17 years removed from the White Sox. So I don't know. I'm trying to think if I would even know anybody in that clubhouse right now. I've obviously crossed paths with Tony a number of times, Joe McEwing, a little bit here and there, but don't have much of a background with anybody else in that clubhouse. And then for that matter, even in their front office, there's been some changes. So I'd be happy for them. I'd be happy for a lot of friends and family in Chicago. I got my friends at the grandstand who are selling a lot of White Sox jerseys and paraphernalia because they've been playing so well. So I'd definitely be happy for them. I'd be happy for my buddy Billy Guidi over there at Court and Carey. It's nice to see crowds back in that place as well. But as far as me personally, congratulations if that were to happen, but probably not as warm and fuzzy as I was probably in 2005.
More to come with Dave Wills in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Dave Will, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Dave, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your reaction to being ranked the second best radio booth in baseball was what?
You know what? It's nice to hear, and it's nice to read about. Most of us don't even know that there's anything like that going on, that people are voting. All I care about is that the fans who are here and listen to us here in Tampa Bay enjoy what they're hearing. And, you know, again, I think that's what Andy and I have done from game one, that when we started back in 2005, that we just try to be, as we like to say, good company. You know, we were there for you almost every single day from March 1st until well past October 1st here the last couple of years. And it's a nice honor. You know, there's a lot of good broadcasters out there. And, you know, just like the baseball team, we made it as American League champs. We came up a little bit short, I think, in a couple of polls. In one poll, we came up short and against San Francisco and John Miller. And then in another one, I think Bob Uecker received a few more votes than us on the Milwaukee Brewers broadcast. But, you know, for a couple of guys that really, that you know, didn't play the game, we don't have flashy resumes. We don't do a lot of branding of ourselves. I think it says a lot about what the fans think of our broadcast when it's just two regular Joes doing the play-by-play. And that's what Andy and I kind of shoot for. Again, just be good company and hope that when it's all said and done, that for the 3 hours or whatever part of the day you listen to us, you enjoyed it, that we painted a picture for you, and that you'll come back and join us soon.
What makes you guys so good? Because I assume the 17 years together plays a big role there.
That I mean, obviously that happens, but it can all, you know, 17 years together, and you can probably want to get at each other's throats every once in a while too. But I think, you know, the thing is that helped Andy and I from the very, very beginning is what we just said. There were, you know, everybody has an ego. And when people say you don't have an ego, you're lying. But everybody has one. It's just a matter of checking it at the door. And I think what helped with both Andy and I is that when we both got into the broadcast booth, we didn't know each other at all, really. He said he knew of me a little bit, but, you know, I pled my ignorance. I said I had never heard of him. And we got into the booth. We both realized that it's not the Dave or Andy show. It's Dave and Andy doing play-by-play of that time, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And that was the most important thing. And it wasn't about who got the big call. It wasn't about who, you know, made the most noise or had the, you know, the phrase that most people repeat. It's about just calling a good baseball game and having fun while doing it. And I think, you know, we've had some people, Ken Levine, who used to write for MASH and for, you know, Cheers and also for Frasier. We started meeting him a little bit back in 08 and 09. And he said, you know, it almost sounded like a MASH episode where you guys were having conversations about a number of different things with a baseball game mixed in. And it really did feel like I was sitting next to you at a bar talking baseball. And that's really what we kind of shoot for. And, you know, I think that the thing, like I said, is that there was no nervousness about, you know, hey, am I overstepping my bounds? Am I, you know, you get work. There's a lot of broadcast booths where guys go in and they're not allowed to be themselves because the bigger ego's in there and prevents it. And I think with Andy and I, there was no such thing. We were allowed to be ourselves. We get along together. We always joke that we spend more time together during the baseball season than we do with our wives, and we do lunch every day together, and we have a blast. And I think by, you know, again, checking the ego at the doors, and if there's ever an issue that's popped up, and I think in 17 years it may have been one or two, we nip it in the bud. We take care of it right away because it's a small booth, and it's a very long season.
And Dave, before we finish up today, last question: what's the funniest moment you and Andy have had on air?
You know, there's so many. I mean, that's just it. We talk to each other all the time about not losing our 12-year-old sense of humor. So, you know, there's been even last night, you know, there's a lot of moments where we laugh about things. I guess what I can, you know, we laugh about stuff all the time. And that's one of the things that we do. If it's been a little bit of a tough stretch, we'll throw on the Jim Volkman and Kevin Matthews, Harry Carey skits they used to do on the old ESPN 1000 or Jim Shorts. We'll throw on a Chris Farley video or, you know, an appearance of his on David Letterman, or find something from Robin Williams, or just, you know, come up with something funny. You know, just the other day, in Atlanta, we were talking about, you know, and it was a blowout game, and Andy opened up a box of Cracker Jack and brought up the story about Harry Carey opening up Cracker Jack boxes and as a young kid and not getting a toy. And Harry, you know, went on this big rant about how Cracker Jack it wasn't as, you know, well thought of as some people say. So we laugh every day. We try to laugh every day, even when we're losing there, you know, and I think, again, to try and just narrow it down to one huge thing, it probably is very sophomoric. And probably might get us into a little trouble. So maybe I'd just be better served to say that one of the things we try to do is laugh every single day. And Maybe one day over a beverage, John, we can share a few more stories.
That sounds like a plan. Dave Wills, thank you so much for joining me. Best wishes for the rest of the season, too, and hopefully the postseason. Really appreciate the time.
I look forward to talking to you when we meet the White Sox in the postseason. Sounds good, John.
Great talk there with Dave Wills, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Dave Wills himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalb, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Here are the Turtles!